Welcome to CPA Practice Advisors Tech to Go podcast series, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists. These thought leaders tackle issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
This is Darren Root, executive editor of CPA Practice Advisor, coming to you with episode 58 of Tech to Go. I'm here today with my regular co-host, Randy Johnston, who's a principal with K2 Enterprises and also Network Management Group Incorporated. So, Randy, welcome today.
Good morning, Darren, and welcome to all of our listeners.
How's the winter season been so far? Have all the accounting firms gone in hibernation, or are you busy out consulting?
Well, you know, I was on the road through last Monday, so, you know, we're recording this mid-February, so 100% booked during January. But I do believe that people are now putting their heads down, going to regular work. It's been pretty amazingly easy travel with the mild weather that we've had. In fact, we've got some of our first snow this morning as we're recording this.
So what are you seeing accounting firms really, what kind of consulting are you seeing at this point? What are firms looking to do?
Well, you know, I appreciate that question, Darren. I think a number of the firms are still looking for easier remote access. They're looking for ways to do better business development. Oddly enough, we still are seeing some of the latest implementations of paperless technologies. Workflow continues to be pretty important to a lot of the firms. And then from there, the tipping point decision, and probably the reason I'm invited in the most, is do I keep my technology in-house or do I take it out of house? And, you know, that tipping point discussion really is public cloud, private cloud, or hybrid. And then usually from there, there's discussions about security, carrying remote devices, how do we protect the firm if something happens to the remote devices, how do we keep people out of the firm if we keep our technology in-house?
Just had this last week, one of our really large clients, Randy, gave me a call and said that they had, at one of their medical practices, had a security breach. A Russian group had hacked into their system, gotten some patient records, things of that nature. Still seems to be a major concern among, you know, all businesses at this point, just the whole security nature of things.
It does seem to be that. I think we had a client who was hacked and not exactly sure of the entry point from Bosnia. Had about $55,000 transferred out of their business account. And, you know, they were just appalled that such a thing could happen to them, but then found out that they were, you know, using their business machine to surf at home without protection and didn't notice that their antivirus was turned off.
Wow.
And, I actually, unfortunately, had a friend of mine over the weekend who called me and said, you know, I'm getting this rather odd thing. If you had a chance to swing by, would you? And sure enough, sometime last Thursday, had something come into his computer and turn off all the protection.
Scary stuff. Well, today that's not Go ahead.
Yeah, these guys are getting more sophisticated and have to continue to be a worry for us.
Yeah, we're going to have to really be paying attention. I mean, firms are going to have to really step up their game. That'll be a great discussion for another time. Today we wanted to discuss, Randy, a couple of things. Windows 8, I know we mentioned that on one of our last calls that Windows 8 was going to be in the marketplace in 2012. And I'd like to spend some time today just talking about everything that you know about Windows 8 and how firms should be looking at Windows 8 for this year. So if you don't mind, kick that one off.
Pleased to do so, and it is a pretty critical topic as we see it. The beta code for Windows 8 is slated to ship here in late February of 2012, and from there, usually Microsoft goes to a release candidate within 60 days or so after that. For Microsoft's new strategies for releasing products, once a product goes to release candidate, the firms that are on open license can choose to deploy that. So rather than an arrival of Windows 8 in the August-September timeframe, which we'd suspected earlier, we could see Windows 8 as early as April under the current mechanisms, and probably no later than June. The key on Windows 8 as we see it right now is the change interface, which is a fairly radical change to the way the product looks and feels. Steve Ballmer's been talking about this for some time with a new interface called Metro. The Metro interface is more of a tile-like affair. Probably didn't really originate on the Windows phones, but that's where most people would have at least seen a version of Metro. Over the past week to 10 days, Microsoft disclosed that they've had Windows 8 running on small processing chips called ARM chips, which are used in the phones for over 2 years. So they've been very slow to get this product to market compared to some of their prior release schedules, but still a pretty big development. The fundamental technologies underneath Windows 8, however, are still Windows 7 technologies. So a lot of the way programs are loaded and printers are supported and those type of things remain fairly consistent. So the migration for most of us from Windows 7 to Windows 8 shouldn't be a big one from a technological vantage point like the jump was to Windows Vista or Windows 7 from XP. Now, beyond that, one other very notable change in Windows 8's release as it stands right now is a new file system, which should have more security and more speed to it. And the second thing that's of interest to note, at this point, Windows 8 is only intended to be released in 64-bit and 128-bit mode. So for our listeners who have been on 64-bit operating systems with Windows 7 or Windows Vista for some time, no big deal. But for those firms who have still been running 32-bit, they may have some software compatibility issues. Now, I think that's probably a pretty good place to get us started. There's probably some more details that I can give, but what do you think might be of interest to our listeners, Darren?
Well, I mean, I've got to think that a lot of firms are not on on Windows 7 at this point still. I don't know if you have any insight into how many firms you think are on 7 versus prior versions.
Well, some of the statistics that I've researched out the last couple of weeks indicate that there's about a third, about a third on Windows XP, about a third on Windows Vista, and about a third on Windows 7. So I think we're going to have a fair number of firms that are already most of the way there with either Vista or Windows 7. The initial developer's edition of Windows 8 is much smaller, much faster code than Windows 7 has been. And that shows a lot of promise in terms of having a more maintainable and easier to use Windows.
I guess one of the things that would concern me, Randy, is that if two-thirds of the firms are not on, let's say, Windows 7, then they're probably running 32-bit at this point. And they probably have some legacy software that has not been updated potentially, not necessarily. And so going to 64-bit only could cause them a little bit of grief, right?
It absolutely could. You know, the good news is most of the major publishers, Thomson and CCH and so forth, have, been supporting 64-bit for some time.
Yeah.
But you'll appreciate I did trade email with a listener out of Long Island this past week who was still running ATB and was concerned about how to get to Windows 7 and wanted to continue to use ATB. And so there are techniques to make a lot of these things work, but the problem is many of the listeners who try to use local IT companies that don't have the expertise fumble and stumble as they try to make all of these different applications work.
as we come out of busy season this year, and I'm going to assume that I'm going to order 3 or 4 or 5 new machines for our office, as we try to do every year, how long am I going to be able to stay on Windows 7, or am I going to want to order Windows 8 machines when they come out?
Well, I don't think you'll be able to stay on Windows 7 very long once Windows 8's available. Let's make an educated guess. I think that's the right way to think about it, that Windows 8 could be available with the third week of June hardware announcements, which would be a pretty doable timing at this point. Most of the vendors will allow a downgrade, if you will, in other words, where you could install Windows 8 or downgrade it to Windows 7. But as a bigger picture strategy, remember that we think it's wise for firms to do open licensing, where you convert the operating system that is installed on the computer, those OEM or original equipment manufacturing licensing, to open licenses. For example, with Dell today, that costs about $90 to get that job done. And that allows you to choose the operating system that you run based on your business needs. So you can order, let's say, OEM Windows 8, pay the $90 fee to convert it to an open license, and then you can choose to use it in a Windows deployment, automated deployment approach. You can choose to backgrade to Windows 7. You can choose to upgrade to some future Windows. And although it's a little bit of off topic at this point, notice that Microsoft has also announced the official betas of Office 15 at this point, which, for lack of a better name, I'm calling Office 2013. I think that's probably when we'll see it. So we're going to actually be going through an iteration here that includes both Windows and Office over this next 12 months or so.
So as we think about, you know, as a small firm starts thinking about their next 12 months or so, would you advise them to start their transition to Windows 8 maybe sometime this summer, maybe in the fall, get a machine or two in, get familiar with it, start learning, and then, you know, we're going to be thinking about migrating to Office 15, you know, maybe 12 months after that. Is that a reasonable strategy?
That's a reasonable strategy and about right. If you're an early adopter of technology, then most likely you'll be working on this during the summer months, certainly at latest in the November timeframe. There's no doubt in my mind that Windows 8 will be widely available at that point in time. And it really drives part of your hardware decisions here, too. We expect a pretty significant change in hardware this year with smaller computers, Ultrabooks and Ultralights being among those. The Ultrabook, by definition, is the Intel specification for much smaller but fast portable computers, much along the line of the Mac Air that you carry, as well as slightly bigger, faster machines. Really, your Mac Air falls in what we'd call an ultralight in these new technologies. And the vendors are not only going to have these very small notebooks for us to consider, but also a new generation of tablets that either run Windows 7 today or run Windows 8 in the exceptionally near future.
Do you think, I'm just looking at my machine now, Randy. I've got, you know, a Fujitsu scanner hooked to it. You know, I've got my printer hooked to it. Am I going to experience any challenges either with the hardware that I have or with, say, Thomson or CCH or Intuit software running Windows 8 by the summer?
Right now I'm thinking not, Darren, because before we started our call today, just to tune myself up, I was actually running on Windows 8. I chose to put Windows 8 on an old touchscreen computer that I carried about 3 to 4 years ago, an HP TouchSmart, because I wanted to see how the touchscreen experience would work in Windows 8. And I was actually amazingly pleased at how good the Windows 8 worked. Beyond that, I've already had my team testing the both CCH and Thomson products because I was concerned what compatibility issues are we going to have. And both of the major vendors, no issues at all. QuickBooks, some of the traditional 64-bit problems that we've seen with QuickBooks still exist, but no worse, no harder on Windows 8 than on Windows 7, but no easier either. So at least with the current beta development edition, it seems to be pretty good. So that's why I'm anticipating the developer's release. That's why I'm anticipating with the beta, it'll be good enough that it'll go much quicker than I had expected maybe in some of our prior conversations.
Well, it sounds like the majority of us, if we do go to Windows 8, we're going to want to install the 64-bit version because 128-bit may cause us some challenges. Would that be fair?
That would be fair. In fact, I really thought it was premature for Microsoft to ship 128 bit versions of Windows, but they must have some reasons that I haven't heard internally. But I don't really see any objection at all right now to running 64-bit. I think personally I've been running 64-bit about 6 years with relatively good success. The first 90, maybe a little longer days, maybe as much as 120 days were pretty painful. But once we get past the printer and the antivirus drivers and so forth, those all seem to shake out and do pretty well. So the typical gear that most CPA firms would have in their offices, the scanners and the printers and so forth, I think all of those are going to remain as compatible as they are today with Windows 7, with Windows 8. So I think the risk of moving on down the road is actually far less than I've seen with some of the other transitions, for example, with Windows Vista.
What happens to a legacy app like a QuickBooks as we move into 128-bit? Is an application like that going to be able to adapt the existing code to operate in a 128-bit environment?
Well, in the current Windows environment, 32-bit and 64-bit applications are hosted in much the same way. The 128-bit code seems to have this runtime environment of 64 and 32-bit apps. So I think they're going to be abstracted okay. You know, again, there's always issues with new applications, but we don't see those being particularly significant this time. Microsoft has been running this 32-bit emulation on 64-bit for some time. Therefore, running a 32 or a 64-bit emulation on their new 128-bit platform, we just don't see as being, you know, that much of a difference going forward.
Good. Well, it sounds like maybe I might be moving to Windows 8 this summer.
Well, I would expect that you would be able to, particularly on your Mac Air, where you can run the virtual machine. Your learning curve and risk is fairly small because you can leave your Windows 7 virtual machine running on the Mac Air, simply install a new Windows 8 virtual machine, and test your applications and see how it works.
Yeah.
The Metro interface does seem to be pretty productive, and when I've used Metro on my old touchscreen, I was really surprised at how good that worked. And when you look at what vendors, let's pick on Lenovo being an example here, what Lenovo has done with computers that are kind of combinations of tablets and personal computers, you know, like the X220 series multi-touch tablets, those are very nice little computers today with full keyboards with pretty good processing speed. And I think Windows 8 will make those types of products even better for the typical user. And so this really gets us to thinking about the strategy. Okay, if you've got a small, light computer that's got a full keyboard, and the weight of it is about the same as an iPad 2 plus a keyboard, wait a minute, what do we want to carry with us? How much do we want to carry? And that really brings us, I think, maybe to the other significant announcement here in the early part of March, the iPad 3. Apple intends to release that new hardware very shortly. We think it's a preemptive strike trying to get in front of a lot of these new Windows tablets. It has four processors for double the speed of the iPad 2. And it's the first release where Apple is using their new high-resolution technologies on their screens, which we expect them to introduce into their other laptop lines over time. And this high resolution is actually roughly double, and if you count pixels the way you really should, it's four times the resolution of the prior iPad 2. So, you know, most of us who use the iPad 2 think the screen looks pretty darn good, but I think this new generation screen promises to look even better. And, of course, Apple claims that it should break less and that it should be, you know, able to handle even more resolution at greater speeds.
So as I look at my iPad 2 and I contemplate an iPad 3, is the form factor going to be about the same from what you've seen?
Well, there's two versions slated in the development. I think we'll get exactly the same form factor in the next series of announcements, but there is actually a small 7-inch version of the iPad that is under development. I've got some rather interesting pictures of what that 7-inch product looks like. It tells me that perhaps the issues of competition with the Kindle Fire, which is not a business tablet but a personal tablet, and with some of the Samsung products is starting to be noticeable. We do know that yesterday Apple filed an additional lawsuit against Samsung trying to keep the Nexus phone from being sold here in the United States. And their basic claim was that there were patent infringements for things like selecting an icon or doing a swipe code to get into the phone and so forth. So we've been watching these type of lawsuits trying to hold up the technology competition for some time. But I think that really means that the competitors are starting to get better, more compatible products. Based on what we saw at CES with the new Android ice cream sandwich, which allows the tablet and phone operating systems to run the same, just like iOS in the Apple environment runs the same on the tablets and the phones, we're going to see a generation of mobile equipment from the competitors this year running that way. The Windows 8 on the tablets all of a sudden means that our tablet runs all of our day-to-day applications like our portable computers can. And that will be a whole new competitive twist that I don't think Apple will have a very good answer to unless they can continue to get remote applications like Citrix and some of the virtual desktops and so forth to run some of those day-to-day applications back in the office.
So for somebody that's not like you and I that wants to just buy the latest thing that comes out, or at least I'm kind of that way, is there any compelling reason for me to think about the iPad 3 at this point in time? A little better resolution, a little faster speed. Other than that, anything you see that's compelling?
Well, clearly, if you don't own a tablet at this point, I would absolutely delay any purchases, and I think we will see a temporary delay in demand or a lack of purchasing right now, because the extra speed allows that tablet to do far more things than the prior versions. And if you think about remote access needing some processing power, and we finally get enough processing power on the iPad 3 to run more remote applications, now the role of the iPad 3 can change. So for those you know, of our listeners, including you and I, that are on the iPad 2s, we probably have enough home for our iPad 2s. It's worth having the iPad 3 for the performance and to see what's available. But for the traditional iPad 1 user, it is probably time to do the upgrade. And if you think about Apple's strategy, Apple's been going back and forth with on their iPhones with the 4 and the 4S and the 3 and the 3S, and they've been trying to get people in the cycles of replacing their iPads every 2 years or iPhones, and I think that's what we're going to see with the iPads. If you go back to the iPad 1 and recognize it was released in the March timeframe, that, yep, sure enough, it's about 2 years, and it's about time to get those iPad 1 buyers up on the iPad 3s. And I would expect the iPad 2 buyers will get onto iPad 4s, although we may have the names wrong today.
Yeah, yeah. I believe you may be right. Well, Randy, we're kind of out of time today. Really enjoy the conversation, as always. You give me some things to think about for coming out of busy season. We're certainly busy right now with tax returns are starting to flow in. Noticed a slight difference this year. You know, the brokerage statements can come out a little bit later this year. Instead of January 31st, they have extensions to February 15th and some of them to February 20th. So we're starting to see a little bit of a lag with getting all the information. Don't know if you heard anything about that.
I did hear about that, and if you think about last year, last year's seasons, most practitioners around the country told me that they got the same final volume when they got to March 15th or April 15th, but they had about a 1 week to 10-day delay in the returns coming in the door. I'm pretty sure this new delay will cause an even further delay this year. So, you know, if you're trying to forecast your volumes, expect the volume to get even further delayed and more compressed as we get closer to the deadlines.
You know, it's making it more challenging all the time. Last year, the delay was due to the IRS not really accepting e-files. I think it was around February 12th, maybe 11th or 12th. This year, you know, it's the brokerage statements, and they're getting more, more complicated all the time. Now they have to report cost basis on brokerage statements. So I'm afraid we're going to compress even more, as you just suggested, which creates quite the challenge for an accounting firm, for sure.
It absolutely does. And, you know, one of the things I'm concerned about is because technology has helped us do things quicker, I think a lot of times we're not planning ahead as far as we should. We're thinking, oh, yeah, we'll still be able to get that done. And unfortunately, I think this is causing a lot of new pressures.
For more info on the CPA Practice Advisor programs and our e-newsletter, visit cpapracticeadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 1-800-456-0864, extension 2107, or tune into future episodes where you'll be able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.
I'm looking forward to hearing about that. So, well, Randy, we're out of time. I appreciate your time today. I look forward to seeing you. We'll see each other at the Thought Leader Symposium here coming up before long. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to that and pick up some new ideas from others around us at that point, too. And I wish you and all of our listeners the best and good day.
Same here. Thanks, Randy. Bye-bye.